Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. So today we're talking with Michael J. Lavery of Whole Brain Power Coaching. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. So you've got a really fresh perspective on the communication game, and you talk to a lot of people all day long in your job, and what have you noticed over the years in the way people speak and talk?
Well, that's a very good question, Chris. The current title of the book that I'm working on is called The Communications Game, and I have been practicing speaking properly for years. I became very cognizant of how powerful our language skills can be if we would only think about producing intelligent, complete sentences. I know it sounds a little bit weird for some people because they're used to truncating the language. Okay, got it. Give it to me in a nutshell. Sure. Really interesting. People were habitually using certain words. And what I've done is I've made a list of those words and I attempt to avoid their usage. Occasionally, they'll be implemented into my own language. I've noticed the word okay being used so many times that a person will possibly use it 300 times in a day. They'll say, yeah, you're right, okay. And I'm saying, yeah, you're right. That's interesting language. I wonder how this developed. How did they learn it? How come people, even if they're attempting to stop using this language, can't even do so? The word like. Uh-huh. Sure, really? All right. If you get hurt, someone says, you all right? And then they'll say, okay, all right, yeah, you're right, uh-huh. And then I started listening to this predictability with almost everyone, my mom, my stepdad, my brothers, aunts, uncles, my associates, people that have purchased my artwork through the years, and they're all doing a very similar thing. However, we used to speak with much more description and articulation years ago. All you need to do is get an old-time movie and listen to the dialogue. Things weren't rushed back then. The scene played out slowly, building to the crescendo. But today, it's hyper-edited. Everything is going quickly. Texting doesn't help in any way. Instead of even saying, okay, you just put K in there now. This is affecting us. And I believe it's making many people very anxiety-prone. Because I think that speech is littered with anxiety. When you think about it, speech is our greatest skill. Nothing even comes close to it. Imagine if you woke up tomorrow and you couldn't make a sound with your voice. The phone rang and you try to say the word hello, but it didn't come out. Then you'd be going back to the doctor and getting brain scans saying, how come I can't make sound with my voice? If you had to experience that for, say, a 24 to a 48-hour period, you would have a nervous breakdown, wouldn't you? If you got your speech back, then you'd say, oh, thank the Lord, I got my speech back. What happens to us is we don't even appreciate this God-given skill, being able to make sounds, human sounds, speech. It's the most complicated thing, to be able to sound the words, to be able to string them together in a coherent, intelligent argument. And we're losing that capacity. People are anxiety-prone. Where's the romance now? Where's the guy that writes a letter to his girlfriend? He texts a selfie where he's in the nude, and then they break up, and then next thing you know, has photographs on the Internet.
Yeah, it is interesting how difficult it is even to get people to talk on the telephone. You know, in radio now, it's very, very uncommon to really talk with anybody over the phone.
I'm aware of that. And if you ask a person, please slow down. Please take your time and respond properly. They can't do it to save their life.
Michael, how does the anxiety, though, how does that affect one's frontal lobes of the brain, over a long period of time?
Well, if you're anxiety prone, that means that your axis of stress is going off and your amygdala and your hypothalamus and your pituitary gland are in concert with each other to send signals to your adrenal cortex to make a very powerful steroid go into the bloodstream and move back to the brain and to the cells of the body. And that initially starts out with adrenaline, but the more powerful steroid is the glucose. glucocorticoids docking on cells in your brain, then you're blocking the process by which glucose can be assimilated. Are you aware of that?
No, I hadn't realized that.
What happens is you have these glucocorticoid receptors on cells, and if your brain is under stress, it says, we have a dilemma that we need to address, and we are under stress. We are under passive stress for some unbeknownst reason, and we're going to use this glucocorticoid, and the cell is essentially being starved of its fuel. And when the cell gets starved of its fuel, the brain has a very interesting substitution that it can implement, and that is overusage of glutamate. And glutamate is a neurotoxin, and the brain produces glutamate. When you see no MSG, no monosodium glutamate, you see that sign in Chinese restaurants because people are afraid of taking glutamate in because it's a neurotoxin. Well, the brain has its own neurotoxin in itself, and that glutamate is actually responsible for memory formation, but if you use it improperly, it kills cells. It causes them to go on a death march because they're not getting the glucose properly. And the glial cell population is malfunctioning.
Just so you know, unfortunately, yesterday, you couldn't get a hold of me because I was in the ER because I had a really bad migraine. And one of the things that happens to me on that is I can't retrieve, I have a real hard time with speech.
That's understandable.
So that's...
How long have you been dealing with migraine?
Oh, long time. Like since I was about 35.
I'm sorry to hear
yeah.
that.
So
migraines are very painful.
Yeah, they did a brain scan. They're concerned because there's some weird stuff on the frontal lobe. So anyway,
And what do you mean by weird stuff?
Well, what did they say? Let's see. They said patchy, vague, low-density areas in the white matter of both frontal lobes.
Patchy, vague, low density of the white matter in the frontal lobes. That means that you need to start rebuilding your myelin, young lady.
Yeah. How do you do that?
You go on whole brain power, and I'm telling you, your brain will start rewiring itself.
Cool.
I want you to be participating properly with me.
Right.
Just imagine every time you go, right, cool, wow. I'm telling you, I am so on to a breakthrough because I deal with people and I teach them how to rewire their thinking about how they speak, and it changes the brain. So when you have this problem in the frontal lobes of the brain by diminished white matter tracts, is that what the problem is?
Low-density areas, patchy, vague, low-density in the white
patchy
matter.
Patchy and vague, meaning that you're losing your white matter tracts.
In both frontal lobes, yeah.
In both frontal lobes, meaning your brain is experiencing atrophication. So do you want to stop that?
Yeah, I do. How did you get into this?
Well, if you read my Whole Brain Power book, you'll realize that I started training myself to become a highly ambidextrously coordinated person. And I'm one of the most coordinated ambidextrous people on the planet. Believe it or not, I can take a standard carpenter's hammer, and the hammer, it doesn't even have a flat head. It's slightly convex. I did it with a Stanley tool hammer, 16-ounce, conventional carpenter's hammer, and I bounced a golf ball one day 7,148 times, I'll miss it. I know that sounds as though I have too much time on my hands, but I started to develop spatial intelligence with my hands where I can actually flip the hammer from one hand to the other while I'm juggling the ball as a manifestation of doing these tenets that I self-imposed upon myself. I started changing my capacity to speak with a level of articulation was significantly elevated. See, I am a brain coach, and I am very happy about some of the things that I witness with people that take my advice and my recommendations, and they take it to heart, and they change their lives. This is a game that I play with people, Chris. Just imagine that you're participating. I'm going to give you a deck of playing cards. You have 52 cards in your hand, and each card has value to it. Suppose each card was only worth a penny, and you lost all 52 cards because you weren't speaking properly. Then you'd say, that's not really that much of a loss, 52 cents, but if it was $100 a card, now we're going to start thinking about holding on to the credit. Just imagine that you have $5,200 in your hand and that each time you're asked a question, it's your responsibility to speak in the game. Why? They'll ask. And I remind them, why is an incomplete question. It's vague and ambiguous. For us to actually breathe, swallow our saliva, think clearly about what we're intending to say to another person, it's one of the most difficult things anybody's been asked to do. And try it with your friends. Try it with your husband. Try it with people that you meet in casual settings. And it's almost impossible for people to stay on the rails and speak properly. And I'm talking about speaking with a subject, a predicate, and a proper agreement between the two, not ending the sentence on a preposition. Our language is becoming very vague and ambiguous. It's truncated. It's choppy. It's laconic. It's uninteresting. It's boring and redundant and very predictable. When a person's asked to start using vocabulary words, this is one of the tests I give a student of mine. For instance, if I said to you, who was the first president of the United States? Hopefully you would say,
George Washington.
George Washington was the first president of the United States, so this would require you to speak in complete sentences. Oh, I forgot the rules of the game. That's what all my clients say. I forgot. Well, this challenge to speak complete sentences from one to the next requires memory, because as the conversation starts to develop, you forget about the original rule to speak complete sentences and to breathe properly and to stay calm and relaxed instead of just using your subconscious reaction to say, okay, you say, Mr. Amygdala, that's part of the brain that's for fight or flight. Why are you involved in my speech production? I don't understand. Why can't you just sit on the bench and let the hippocampi structures take over? Let the frontal lobes have the neural activity so that the executive function is working to peak efficiency. Believe it or not, I have people that practice this methodology, and they contact me later and say, Michael, I've never slept so deeply as of recent, and my dreams are extremely vivid. Because what happens in the training is I'm asking them to speak properly. I'm asking them to use variety and description. I'm asking them to use the right side of the brain that actually is involved in visual imagery being produced so that the information can be passed across the corpus callosum, the cable that connects the two hemispheres of the brain, so that the speech center, which is primarily located on the left side of the brain, can activate. Sometimes people have speech centers that are located on both sides of the brain, and those people are usually left-handed or ambidextrous. Part of the whole brain power coaching that I do with students is I analyze their handwriting. And most people in the modern world have really poor handwriting. Wouldn't you agree with that, Chris?
If they even write. This next generation is all about just keyboards, from what I've seen.
I want you to think about two different people. One person has a beautiful calligraphy pen and three or four pieces of linen paper, and they're writing a letter to somebody. And the reason they have three or four pieces of paper with them is because when they're using that calligraphy pen and they're misspelling a word, their option is to try to cross it out and continue, or say, I'm not going to send this letter to somebody with this mistake, so they have to start again. But when you have the technology of the keyboard, why not backspace it, spell check? The brain's getting lazy. It doesn't have to be able to remember to spell the word association properly, or the word triglycerides, or opportunistic. These five-syllable vocabulary words that I challenge my students to be able to access instantly, it causes them to have a lot of delay. If I went down the whole alphabet exclusive of W, X, Y, and Z and said, we're going to come up with some five-syllable words that begin with M, such as momentarily, manipulation, or meticulously, or methodology, or mathematical, or memorization, people go, how do you get those words so quickly? You've heard all those words, haven't you? But do you have it as an intent to actually use them in conversation? And people, most of the time, are using laconicism. That word means to the point. Got it? Sure. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Interesting. Really? No way. And that doesn't cause the brain to have to work that hard. I think there's a lot more blood supply going to different regions of the brain to actually think around redundancy and to use the full plethora of one's vocabulary. That alone rewires the brain. combined with cursive handwriting with either hand. Leonardo da Vinci was famous for writing with his left hand in italic script, so it was completely mirror image. He also wrote with his right hand and wrote normally when he had documents that he needed to present to people. But for his own personal journals, of which there are many examples of it that have survived through history, his writing was mirror image. One of the most expensive books in the world is the Codex Leicester that was purchased by Bill Gates for in excess of $30 million. It was a 70-page, 5x7 on linen, leather-bound book that was written completely mirror image, with his thumbnail drawings of some of his concepts and ideas and inventions. And people say through the use of mirror writing, he was able to hide his ideas that might have been controversial to the church, but I believe he was doing it for a number of reasons. One being that he was stimulating the creative savant side of the brain, which primarily resides in the right frontal and temporal lobes. So in this communication game that I'm working on, we have people that are willing to participate, and there's a lot of laughter because most people are making a lot of mistakes. And then if it's actually being recorded, then they hear those mistakes. And in this game, if you were given credit, what happens most of the time is you don't appreciate the credit. So if you lose it, then it's not really that big a deal because you didn't gain that money by your hard work. You were just the recipient of the money. But if it was your own money, imagine that every time you made a mistake, you had to pay a dollar fine. Then you'd start really thinking about what you wanted to say. Wouldn't you agree with my assessment?
Sure, yeah. And it's interesting what you say about the handwriting being so critical, because I know a lot of experts in dealing with children and a lot of kids with autism, one of their real challenges is mastering the written word, being able to write. And a lot of people just recommend that you just jump immediately to keyboarding with these kids, that they're never going to catch up and that you shouldn't spend time on the writing. What have you seen with that?
If you study the work of Montessori, she was teaching the street urchins of Rome that were essentially labeled as brain damage to write in cursive and be able to read rather well. I'm working with a gentleman now that's totally dyslexic that can't read, and as soon as I had him do some cursive handwriting, he could read the cursive and he could read my cursive handwriting, but he has a serious problem with the print. Cursive handwriting comes from Old English, means running along. When you think about the elegance of cursive, it's all connected. A person that does it rather fluently can cause a person that's receiving this writing that's stimulating their visual cortex to actually have a wonderful experience. I have letters from my father who passed away and from my mother who's still alive. And those are cherished, handwritten, cursive-written letters filled with love and kindness that I cherish. I don't cherish emails that people send me. Email is disconnected. Print in itself is very much disconnected. There's no personal touch in the print when it's coming from a machine. What happened to us as a society is we've been divorced from our hands. The homunculus theory essentially states that the hands have a disproportionate amount of space reserved on the brain surface for their usage. It's called the sensory homunculus and the motor homunculus. When you have an injury to your finger, you get a shard of glass underneath the fingernail or a splinter. It's so painful because you're activating those sensory and motor neurons that are in your hand. You can damage your upper arm, get a gash in your thigh, and you have to maybe get stitched up, but it's not nearly the pain that your hands have, because your hands have way more receptors on them. When the hands are utilized for handwriting, it stimulates the memory. There's an old saying, if you want to remember something, then you write it down. You don't print it down. You don't tap it on your iPad. You write it with cursive handwriting, the way they used to do it back in the early 1900s, where millions of people had very similar-looking handwriting, because a man named Austin Palmer created a writing system that the nuns gravitated towards, and then they taught that to their students. The handwriting today of our professional athletes is chicken scratch. Look at the handwriting of someone such as Arnold Palmer, or Jack Nicklaus, or Ben Hogan, or Bobby Jones. Mickey Mantle even had beautiful handwriting. Handwriting was an essential part of our education. And the hands have a lot to do with how the nuclei bundles and the brain are working. When your hands are activated because your will says, I want you to be able to write well, and you're saying this metaphorically to your right hand, and your right hand doesn't want to do it properly, you are the master of your hand, or your hands, or your brain hemispheres, for that matter. So when a person has chicken scratch writing, and 30 to 60 days later, it's so beautiful looking, then there's been a behavioral modification. One of my top students, a man named Nathan Thompson, has impeccable handwriting. A few years ago, he had the worst handwriting. He has very lengthy reviews about all the manifestations and changes that he experienced by doing my program. This kid here is amazing. In the eyes of his friends and colleagues, kind of a superstar. But yet, a couple years ago, he considered himself a dweeber. He confided in me and said, Mr. Lavery, my life is going nowhere. I'm depressed. I'm anxiety prone. And I feel like I'm getting old before my time. And now he's more youthful looking. And believe it or not, he grew taller in his 20s, his late 20s. There's a young man named the Cerebral Prince. He won the Harlem Globetrotters contest for basketball handling skills. This kid is amazing. He writes with both hands. He's so well-spoken. And he's approximately 19 years of age. And he's doing commercials for Nike now. And I taught him initially to use the ambidexterity techniques in the tenets. So we learn how to juggle. So if you go on Whole Brain Power Coaching, you'll see, according to the scientific community, is there's growth. There isn't just new connections happening in the brain, but more importantly, there is increased thickening of the myelin sheath. The myelin sheath in the brain and in the peripheral nervous system are comprised of two different types of cells. In the central nervous system, those cells are called oligodendrocytes. In the peripheral nervous system, those cells are called swarm cells. Now science is identifying that there's a source of a master steroid called pregnenolone. When they take an accident victim, that person has passed away and they're a teenager, they're able to take the sciatic nerve and they're able to create a pure medium, literally 99% pure medium of swarm cells. And the swarm cells are expressing through enzymic reactions pregnenolone, which is the master steroid, which makes DHEA, dehydroepiandrosterone, then the downstream benefits called steroidogenesis occur. They've been proving in the animal kingdom and with mammals such as rats and mice, with the songbird, that the brain is a source of testosterone production. And that's revolutionary. Some of my students will go to the doctor and the doctor scratches his head because this person's been going to the same doctor to take the same type of blood examination year after year. And this time the doctor says, whatever you're doing this year, keep it up. And the gentleman says, what do you mean by that? He says, well, your triglycerides have fallen and your HDLs have significantly spiked. And the person doesn't really understand what the spiking of the HDL actually means. Well, the doctor says, well, now that you have more HDLs, that means that you're collecting your LDLs that normally would stay in the blood serum. So if you have excessive amounts of LDLs, which are your low-density lipoprotein, and they're not being utilized to build the membranes of cells, and they collect in the bloodstream, they become rancid in the bloodstream. And very low-density lipoproteins actually have the capacity to impregnate the endothelial muscle tissue. There's a lot of problems with people's cholesterol. However, some of the students that are diligently practicing whole brain power coaching, what they're experiencing is a change in the blood serum. There's a gentleman named Andrew McDonald. Andrew is about 34 now. And Andrew McDonald went to see an endocrinologist. And the doctor was scratching his head because Andrew's testosterone levels were twice what the normal rate should be. A man that's in his 30s would have testosterone around 550 to 600. Andrew's testosterone was almost 1,200. And the doctor looked at him and said, you can't be doing this naturally. You have to be on some type of anabolic steroid to have your testosterone elevated this much. And Andy was doing my program. It's very simple to do it. You practice becoming a pen-walled ambidexter. See, the word ambidexterity is coming from ambi meaning double and dexter meaning right. So dexter comes from Latin. Ambidexterity is really a misnomer. There's very few people that are truly ambidextrous, meaning they can write with both hands, they can kick a football with both feet, play guitar both ways. Those people are extremely rare. Most people fit into the spectrum of mixed-handedness. Say they write with one hand and they throw a ball with the other, or they'll kick with their left foot for some reason, and everything else will be right-handed. Or they'll be left-eye dominant, but right-handed at everything. But some people that diligently practice become what they call the pen-walled ambidexter. And there's classic cases in history where a person becomes a Hall of Fame baseball player when he was really naturally a righty, but injured the right arm as a young boy and learned how to throw a ball left-handed and actually threw the ball harder left-handed than they ever did right-handed. And so what happens to the brain is if you give it an opportunity to rewire itself, it does. Babe Ruth was left-handed at handwriting, but when he went to the boarding school, the nun slapped his left hand, and he had to write right-handed. They actually did him a favor. They made his brain rewire. Have you ever considered writing left-handed in a mirror image, Chris?
I've tried it, yeah.
And how did it feel?
Not real comfortable.
That means that your brain is kind of rejecting this idea. If you kept that up, it's amazing how fluid it can become.
And this is fascinating stuff, Michael. And with your whole brain power coaching, though, I mean, what kind of things do you do with people? How do they make these changes?
Well, the first thing I do with a person is I give them a memory test. One of the first memory tests I'll give a person, Chris, is I'll tell them the name of my book approximately 5 times, and then I'll ask them during the conversation, what's the name of my book? And they'll go, Power of Thinking? It's interesting. Were you paying attention? No, I wasn't really paying attention. And so then we'll exchange biographical information, and I'll remember most of the things that they tell me, but they'll only remember a small amount of what I told them. There's a test in my book on page 122. It's called the Buzz Game. A simple way that we can play this game, if you would be willing to participate, is we'll count and we'll alternate counting. So I'll say 1, you go 2, I go 3, you go 4. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we'll count to 20, and when we count to 20, we'll say the word buzz on any number that is a multiple of 5. So we would buzz on 5, 10, 15, and 20. So we don't say those numbers. We use the word buzz as the substitute. Do you understand?
I do.
So let's see if you can get the 20 on the first try. Ready? 1.
2.
3.
4.
Buzz.
6.
7.
8.
9.
Buzz.
11.
12.
13.
14.
Buzz.
16.
17.
18.
19.
Buzz.
Very good. So you passed the buzz game, the easy game. You could still sense a little bit of apprehensiveness, didn't you?
Yes.
Because you didn't want to make mistakes, is that correct?
Sure.
So now we're going to count to 50, and this game is a little bit more complicated. And I'm going to give you 3 tries to play it. Are you willing to participate?
I will.
We'll count to 50. And we'll alternate count, and this time we'll throw out the first rule of those multiples of 5, so disregard that. And remember that every time we come to a number that has a 7 in it, and those numbers would be 7, 17, 27, 37, and 47, we'll say the word buzz. And then we'll come to any number that has a multiple of 11. So we have 11, 22, 33, 44. Now, you can't be writing these numbers down. If you are, then you're cheating, okay?
Nope, no writing.
So the last rule of the game, Chris, is we'll buzz on any number that has a multiple of 7. So the first rule is any number with a 7. Second rule, any number with a multiple of 11. And the third rule is any number with a multiple of 7. Those numbers would be 7, 17, 27, 37, 47, 11, 22, 33, 44, and 14, 21, 28, 35, 42, 49. You have to be attentive counting to 50 with me. You have 3 tries to get to 50. If you make a mistake, you have to go back to 1. Do you understand?
I do.
I want you to start the game. Go ahead.
Okay. 1.
2.
3.
4.
5.
6.
Buzz.
8.
9.
10.
11.
Oh, my gosh. That's a multiple of 11. Okay, so you're 0 for 1. Now you have 2 more tries. Now take a deep breath and put your thinking cap on. I'll start the game this time. Ready? 1.
2.
3.
4.
5.
6.
Buzz.
8.
9.
10.
Buzz.
12.
13.
14.
Oh, I have a multiple of 7 on there, Chris.
Oh, you're right.
Okay, so you're 0 for 2 now. You could get better at this game, couldn't you?
I could.
That's what it is about. What happens now is when you expose a person to a challenge such as the buzz game, and they don't play it, and they're smart, and they're intelligent. You're an intelligent woman. This is not about intelligence. This is about the function of your subiculum and your dentate gyrus. What are you talking about? Well, the subiculum and the dentate gyrus are part of the hippocampi structures. Maybe we need to address the cellular function of those neurons and those helper cells called astrocytes that coexist in that part of your brain, the very critical part of your short-term memory processing. As we get older, as we go down that timeline, that hippocampi structure has a tendency to atrophy. However, the London cabbie drivers have massive hippocampi structures because they have 25,000 street names in their working memory. The Greeks, 2,500 years ago, would memorize 25,000 lines of poetry. Most people today have a hard time memorizing a 10-digit phone number.
That's true.
Yeah. So what happened to us is technology made it easier for our brains to be able to say, oh, I don't need to remember that number because it's on my cell phone. And then when they lose their charge, they go, oh, my gosh, what's their number? I can't call him now because I don't have access to my memory and go to a payphone or borrow somebody else's phone. What's happening to people in the modern world is we're losing our ability to have a trained memory. And I have to tell you that there have been thousands of people that I've met that I tested the buzz game with, and they didn't pass it. There's only been a handful of people that have ever passed.
And I'll bet it's getting worse with all the technology, like you mentioned. Okay, so Michael, let's go back to though. You talked a lot about anxiety and speech being very connected, and you know, I'd like to hear more about what's the relationship with that, and why is it so important? You know, why is it so important?
Well, if you read the news, anxiety amongst young people is at an all-time high. Use of prescription drugs to combat anxiety is at record proportions. Xanax, Zoloft, all the Oxycontins, all the painkillers, the benzodiazepine, Valium. But if you listen to people and the way they speak, it's so self-evident in their stammering and their stuttering. But what happens to us is we're addicted to speed. What is this language? I don't understand. Well, it's learned. We have mirror neurons. Our anxiety is actually spread from one person to the next. Well, what if we just took one breath at a time and said, let's breathe now. Let's see if we can actually get blood flowing into the frontal lobes of the brain by speaking properly. Now, I'm going to change Chris's behavior because Chris has a tendency to say, sure, got it, okay. Is that true?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Many, many hours of painful editing. Right.
So, Chris, yes. I want you to take your two hands and make a fist out of them and then butt your knuckles together so that you're looking down on your two hemispheres of your brain. So this is using your imagination, and you're looking down through your transparent skull, and you're looking at your brain hemispheres, and tell your brain hemispheres, there's a new sheriff in town, and we just put the old sheriff into a retirement home. And now I'm expecting you to have some behavioral modification, girls. What you're going to do is you're going to give your brain some new drills that it must accomplish. And now there's new rules and regulations being implemented, and the brain will fight you every inch of the way. If you do some research about the scarring and the thinning of the white matter tract system in a normal aging human brain, it's definitely one of the problems. If your wires, the white matter tracts, which carry electrically charged ion particles around in your brain, aren't able to do that efficiently, then you're going to have a problem, aren't you?
Well, yeah. No, shoot. Okay.
So what happens now is when you have a building, say an industrial plant, and there's been improper maintenance and care of the wiring system, and maybe someone's spilled some chemicals and it got on the wires and then the chemicals eat through the rubber that insulates the copper, then the fire marshal comes in and says, we need to red tie this building until we bring it back up to code. We've got short-circuiting of wires and sparks flying all over the place. So you have to rewire the building. The brain has a capacity to grow parts back. There's a book by Norman Doidge, The Brain That Changes Itself, definitely recommended reading. The jugglers that were involved in two separate studies, one in London and one in Germany, showed that their brains grew the surface of the cerebral cortex by 5% in only 90 days. Part of the brain that was growing was the white matter. And white matter cells actually can proliferate.
So I get to take up juggling.
I would highly recommend that you would learn how to juggle and write with both hands and start to do some of the memory drills.
And so how do you work with people, Michael? What does it look like?
I analyze a person's speech. I noticed that you didn't use any profanity so far in this interview. Congratulations. Just imagine that we would take a look at certain words and say, these words that you're overutilizing are cousins to profanity. And what will those words be? What do you think my no-no list of words happens to be?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like?
Okay.
Then that word really is also one of those ways of asking a question, really? This is highly recommended that you would practice this. Go to some group function and for approximately 15 minutes be silent. Just nod at people. Hi. Until people come up to you and say, Chris, what's wrong? You're not participating. Oh, I am participating. I'm doing one of my assignments. This gentleman suggested that I listen to intelligent language. And he listened to everybody the use of, okay, right, got it. I go, oh, my God. And then you listen to these words, and then you identify that certain people have a favorite group of words that they happen to overutilize. You'll see the pattern forming. And the words start to get louder and louder because some person is using okay constantly. Another one's using, yeah, you're right. As you listen to it, you say to yourself, do I want to do this the rest of my life? Or is it time for me to have some change? One of the greatest feelings that I ever get is when I have the opportunity to give a dissemination of this information about whole brain power to an audience, and I have them spellbound because I'm not using notes and I'm using the full plethora of my vocabulary. I'm taking every opportunity and every possibility to raise the intellectual capacity and to have significantly enhanced descriptive language so my communications are causing people to have a greater assimilation of the information and their curiosity gets piqued. And I create this inspiration, and they listen to some of my recommendations. And they come up to me afterwards and shake my hand and say, that was a wonderful speech. You've inspired me. Can I get your book, your workbook? I'm going to practice it because I'm losing my memory, and I'm so frightened of it because I have a father that has Alzheimer's, and I don't want to go that way. And I'm afraid the numbers that they're projecting of the pandemic of Alzheimer's and dementia is so frightening, can't even tell people. And it has nothing to do with our intelligence. If your arm's in a cast for 90 days, I don't care if you had the most wonderful muscle tissue and bone tissue and vascularity in your arm with tendons and ligaments to completely intact with your bone density. If you wear a cast for 90 days, your arm will come out atrophy. You'll lose bone density and muscle density, and the elasticity of the ligaments and the tendons will have also been seriously compromised. Only 90 days. If you had to wear the cast for 6 months, you might as well forget it. The arm will never, ever come back to its normal usage. Isn't that frightening?
It is. And so, Michael, do you think that this increase in dementia and Alzheimer's is, it's not just lifestyle? You think it's just our habits of thinking?
I believe that if you don't get the blood flowing and coursing through the frontal lobes of the brain, and having the executive function working, then that part of the brain actually starts to atrophy. When you're doing this interview, are you lying down or are you sitting upright?
No, I'm sitting up.
Well, what I'm getting at the moment is you have to fight gravity's effect on the blood flow, which has a tendency to want to seek its own level, so blood wants to flow out of the brain. Isn't that
right?
Common sense?
Yes, it is common sense.
So when you exercise vigorously, you get your heart rate up, the blood courses into the brain because it has to move the limb. However, when you're sitting and you're speaking and using the least amount of energy to get your concepts across, and you don't use the full potential of descriptive language that you have inside of you, is the blood coursing into your parietal lobes to select the word called serendipity. How about using our brain to speak properly? It's amazing what happens when you make this change. And when you ask that question, how do I work with people? Ask Michael Senoff. When Michael Senoff first told me he doesn't want to talk that way, I go, Michael, you could save a lot of money if you spoke properly and you didn't have to pay your editor to clean up the language. You could save money. When I started to talk that way, he goes, I think you're onto something. And he gets a letter from his editor. She says, Michael, you are a joy to be working with. I have to do very little work with editing on your speech. However, the person that you were interviewing, I had to do a lot of work there. When Michael Senoff started to practice whole brain power, he got stronger, and he had a mood elevation. Why do people have mood elevation doing my program?
I'm having a mood elevation already. You're hilarious. Okay. So, Michael, why is it so important, this whole idea of communication, and how does it, how's it going to affect one's brain, you know, if they, with whole brain power coaching, is it a long program, or, I mean, how does it make such a difference for people?
Well, the first thing we do is we give you a hand-eye coordination test, and then when you fail miserably, you go, I can never do that. I said, well, let me introduce you to a person that said the same thing, and then this person steps up to the plate, and they're doing marvelous skills of juggling and the different drills with the hammer and the golf ball, the tennis ball, the ping pong ball, and their handwriting, they're writing with both hands, and they're able to go back and forth with me on the five-syllable vocabulary, or I'll ask them to spell the word experimental using numbers. So A is 1 and B is 2 and C is 3. So experimental using numbers is 5, 24, 16, 5, 18, 9, 13, 5, 14, 21, 12. And people go, I could never do that. Well, of course you could if you practiced it. And then the person says, I was not sleeping well, and I started sleeping extremely well. Or I was very anxiety-prone, and my anxiety has dissipated. When I first started coaching people, they'd say, how much time do I have to spend on the handwriting? Well, how about 15 minutes a day? And then the memory, how about 15 minutes for that? So that's 30 minutes. And then the hammer drills, I have to do 45 minutes a day every day? I can't do that. And I started thinking, oh, I know what you could do. You could actually do my program all day. What are you talking about? I got a wife and kids and a job to go to. I said, well, you could do it all day long if you just did one fundamental thing. Just started to think before you would speak. What are you talking about? I said, think a sentence and then speak it. Okay. But you didn't think before you said okay. You just blurted out okay.
Yes, and I notice it happens pretty naturally. I'm already doing that with you now, but I won't say it's easy.
It's not easy at all. You have to actually reroute around your natural subconscious way of being. I bet you if you were rewarded, say, a significant amount of money for each complete sentence you strung together, let's say it's $10 a complete sentence that you put together, would you start practicing speaking complete sentences? I want you to imagine the most beautiful guardian angel comes down from heaven because that particular guardian angel heard about your recent emergency and the scan of your brain and felt your need to have some assistance. The guardian angel came down for 90 days to help you out, and then the migraine headaches dissipated, and then 90 days later you went in and had another scan, and they say, this is interesting. We've got some activity with these white matter tract systems on both hemispheres of the frontal lobe. Would you be happy about that?
Definitely, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. The guardian angel says, that's not going to work, Chris. But what the guardian angel does is shows you all these other people he or she has helped. And then when you start seeing these other people and get their testimonial, you say, I will acquiesce your demands against my wishes. I don't want to do this, but...
Yeah, no, and I think what you're doing is amazing. I mean, why do people say that? I mean, I will admit I am very guilty of right. I get enthusiastic about what someone is saying, and I want to agree. Right, you know, what is that?
Well, that's your habit. You learn from somebody else.
Ah, okay.
And then, okay is the most common used word in the world today because it comes from Old Kinderhook, and it was invented and popularized by Martin Van Buren because he went to a school called Old Kinderhook, and he had the OK Club. It's a good thing he didn't come from L.A. because then every time you said fine, you'd say L.A. instead of okay.
It is interesting, though. You run out of things to say when you don't use those words.
That's exactly what we're getting at here. You don't have the full plethora and arsenal of your sentences and fragments. So, for instance, instead of saying okay, I say I concur with you, Chris. Please proceed.
Have you done any studies with people on chronic illness or anything?
I'm not a doctor. What I am is a brain coach. There's a major difference.
Right. But, I mean, I could see this being very applicable for stuff like MS and things like that.
Well, MS is a body's immune system. It's battling its autoimmune system problem, where the immune system actually is stripping the oligodendrocytes from the white matter tract system.
So, Michael, this is fascinating stuff, and I really want to make sure that people can find out where to get some more information on this and whatever else you can share with people.
They can visit wholebrainpowercoaching.com. They can go on the forum, join the forum. It's highly recommended that you get our program with Michael Senoff and myself that we've partnered up to create the downloadable videos and the audio, and these are in transcribed form as well. People get this program, they start practicing it. And the book's been self-published, and I'm currently working on the communications game. My first book took me a long time to put together, but it finally came to a reality, and the workbook was published about 6 months after the Whole Brain Power book was printed. And so the concepts of doing your handwriting every day and practicing, thinking more detailed thoughts and then speaking them, that's your assignment, Chris. Anything that you can get from this interview today would be a benefit to you. It's to enhance your capacity to communicate and then become more curious at the same time. And then start investigating, how can the brain repair its white matter tract? What can I do? Is it possible for the brain to rejuvenate itself? Read that book, The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle, where the myelin is part of the talent. You could practice these methodologies. And I hope you stay in contact with me.
Definitely. I'll get a copy of the book. And
maybe we can have a chance to meet in person. I know you're living in L.A. currently.
Yeah, we're actually up near Santa Barbara. We're about an hour north of Santa Barbara.
Well, you might want to venture down to Orange County sometime, and I could meet with you, and I could show you personally how I work with my clients.
Oh, that'd be marvelous. You're in Orange County?
I certainly am.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I grew up till I was about 7.
Well, I feel honored and privileged to be a guest on your show.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye. That's the end of our interview, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more great health-related interviews, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.